Do you feel continually let down by modern media? Do you miss the good old days, back when all that mattered was a good story and not some agenda? Do you have ambitions of picking up a pen and pad and fighting the creative war yourself? Then this is the podcast for you. Each week, I'm going to talk to a creator who said enough is enough and started making the content they wished was out there. Join us as we discuss the ups and downs of the self-publishing world. We want to help empower you to join the Iron Age of media. Welcome to Iron Age Marketing. All right. Welcome, everyone, to the Iron Age Marketing Podcast. I'm Mickey P. I am here today with Emmanuel Thompson to talk to him about his first book, and we'll kind of get into things. He's a very interesting guy. I haven't known him very long. I was actually turned on to him by our first guest, Edward Black, and I'm really looking forward to this this conversation. So the first thing I got to ask is why did you decide, hey, I need to put out a book? And why was this the book?
Well, I can answer that in a few different ways. Just a little bit of background. I'm Emmanuel Thompson, also known as Tepesh, and thank you for having me on. I decided to write this book mostly because it wasn't much of a decision. It was more of a urge. It was like storytelling has always been a passion. It's always been something that I, as a little kid, plopped in front of the TV. All I really had was stories, and then eventually plopped in front of the internet. I realized that anyone can tell a story. And I think part of the reason I was able to finish writing, because it took 6 years to finish the first novel, because it's a plan to be a series, and I'm working on the second one, which is actually a prequel to the first one right now, Gangster Plant Natural Selection. I strongly believe that anyone can tell a story, but no one's going to tell it the way you can. And there was just so much shit swirling around in this cranium, because I was always a history buff in high school, and I was always a martial arts and physical culture guy. And I thought, damn, there's all these books out here in the world, but no one's going to make a book that fits my tastes and my interests and the things I give a shit about as much as I can. So I started writing out the basic outline of what would become the Gangster Plant, probably all the way back in middle school. There was some things that I would use, and I didn't get the confidence to start seriously plugging away at it until I think when I was 21 or 20 or 22, maybe. I was hanging out with my homeless friends, because I went to I was working after high school. For a variety of reasons, I ended up working at a bookstore called More Than Words, and I made a friend there. I made a lot of friends there. It was kind of like it's both a job and a job training program kind of deal, mm-hmm. where a lot of these people that would work there were at-risk youth. And from just the working there, I managed to realize a couple of things. One, Boston is a very brutal, hard city. And two, everyone's just looking for an escape. And most media sucks. And that's it's hard to escape life and its troubles when you can't think of anything greater than yourself. So the first thing that I thought when I was writing was, how do I make people think of things that are bigger than themselves? And the way I did that was drawing from influences from both history and wrestling, pro wrestling. There's some characters that are lifted straight out from wrestlers. And one of my favorite groups of characters in my novel series is called Saners. They were based off of the comic book Crossed and the wrestlers of Sanity. And then I added in a bunch of stuff from House Bolton from Game of Thrones. I basically wanted to create an antagonist so unlikable that you can't fathom someone supporting them. And this would be a spoiler if you had context, but there's a character that is these things called Saner. Saner just means someone that considers themselves sane. In the context of my novels, they're a group of people, like a post-apocalyptic faction that whose culture is violence and sexual violence and depravity. So that's what creates their evilness, for lack of a better word. Because in Crossed, it's a virus that turns you into a sociopathic cannibal monster. In Gangster Plant, it's your culture.
It's talking about culture. That's an interesting way of doing it. Have you ever watched Firefly?
Oh yeah, those guys, the Reavers, also.
Which the way you talk about it reminds me a lot of like what they are. They're like a highly evolved human being that, but they evolved to like all of the worst human tendencies.
Yes, except for the evolution part, where it's, yeah, these are just normal humans. It's kind of one-to-one, because I remember an interview when they described the Reavers, because that was the thing that made me want to watch Firefly. I never finished it, but that was the Reavers, because they said something in there that was like, they'll kill you, they'll eat you, and they'll fuck you, but hopefully in that order or some shit, yeah, like that.
Exactly. So I have to ask the question. So how much of, you know, Beyond Thunderdome was inspired this?
Huge Mad Max guy. I fucking love Mad Max. Thunderdome's actually my least favorite one in the series, if you can believe it.
It's the least favorite, but it's that whole, I think, the Tina Turner thing that like makes it what it is. It's fun.
I like the weirdness of the plane kids, but that's just because I love Mad Max. I saw all the movies in that series. However, I would say my biggest inspiration, bar none, and I hate that I forgot this when I was talking about it earlier, was Fault New Vegas. Fault New Vegas.
Okay.
Fault New Vegas. I took Latin in high school because I played Fault New Vegas.
I'm not a big video game guy, but the Fallout series was always really, really interesting to me. I've watched a few like game playthroughs on it just because the storyline is so interesting.
Ed Black, your first podcast guest, kept saying that he can't get to run, so it's like, fuck this game. I don't blame him, but like, I grew up with it, so I can't. I mod my shit so hardcore.
Yeah.
But I love that game so much, I can't even play it right now, because I just like, I've seen almost everything that the world has to offer, but it's just the perfect. Mm-hmm. The reason why I think I appreciate Fallout New Vegas, and I hate Fallout 4, which is another reason I wrote this book, was Fallout New Vegas gives itself the ability to write your, anything could happen. Anything could happen in the world of Fallout New Vegas. It's like radiation is basically magic in that world.
Mm-hmm.
And I love when science advances so far that magic is essentially the equivalent. Because I don't believe in fairy tale pixie dust. I like cosmic horror. I'm not a huge Lovecraft guy, but I appreciate the things he's done for the genre. I think Azathoth is the coolest fucking thing. Mm-hmm. And
I'm curious if there's a particular thing you have against Lovecraft. I have to ask, is it the race thing?
I don't care for his racism. That's just, look, my favorite black metal band probably is Burzum, and okay. So I can't fault the guy for being racist. I just think he's wordy.
So I guess, and as I love words, and like linguistics is how I kind of got the angle I come from, and I love all the esoteric language, and like just the idea of like he wrote in a way that was out of time, even in his time. Like he was using words back then that nobody used anymore, and I just love that. There's, to me, there's something punk rock about writing archaically just for the hell of writing archaically and like trying to be like, he's that perfect, like, I'm going to do something that's not saleable, even though I'm going to complain about not being saleable.
I kind of have to agree on that note, because there's something archaic about the experience of being in America. Maybe it's me as a being half Jamaican and half Southern black or something, but there's something beautifully archaic about being in Boston's particularly, because it's just like, maybe archaic's not the word. It's like isometric. Things are just not like, we have all these old brick buildings that have been around since the 1600s. Mm-hmm. Some of them. There's a house down my street that's from this, like the first or second house ever lived in the American colonies. Mm-hmm. And you notice in like slang, I have a Boston accent. Like I can't say Martha Stewart for the life of me. I have to think about it.
Okay.
And I think the missing R thing is like a remnant of Irish colonists or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
That's just stayed in Boston but didn't go anywhere else in this country.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how language works. And don't have many people that have this perspective. So I'm curious, did you get into the Lovecraft country when that was going around? Read the book?
I did not.
Good.
I did not. I heard it was shit. It looked like shit. I didn't even get into Watchmen show because it looked like dog shit. And I was like, why are they playing the Ku Klux Klan in motherfucking Watchmen? It was already a very good socio-political commentary about the modern fucking world.
Well, the thing that amused me most about Lovecraft Country is because, so like when they made the TV show, they definitely, they leaned on black creators for the show, but the book itself was written by a white guy. And I found, I'm like, so this is the, it's supposed to be super progressive. And it's, I enjoyed the concept because it does definitely, it's interesting to me knowing the history of that stuff to kind of look at it flipped.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have rather a black writer, I guess, write that. You know, someone who has like more of a perspective. There was something weird about a white guy talking like fucking black 50s people that just weirded me out. Like,
I think I think progressive. Look, I'm more. I would consider my political alignment to just being for the future. I want my kids and everyone else's kids to have a country and world that they can understand and live in successfully. But I think progressivism and trying to nail a point on the head that no one was asking for to be, I think that it can be a hammer that can poison any sense of like realism or actually making a good statement. If you're just making statements to make yourself feel better.
Yeah. Like I said, I think that the concept of like writing Lovecraft stories from like a black perspective is interesting, just given the history. But at the same time, it's like,
can you do it well?
Yeah. Can you do it well is the important part. And that was missed in the book, in the show, and like everything on that one.
There's an alternate history where I sell out and I rename my book The Danger Planet very strongly.
I'm curious, why did you choose to go with Gangster Planet?
Growing up, I just to give you some more perspective on like my background, I was born in Boston and in 1998. I'm a zillennial. And I grew up in Dorchester. And for the unenlightened, Boston is basically two cities.
Mm-hmm.
Like what we call Boston is Dorchester and Boston. Dorchester became a part of Boston, I think sometime in, I forget when. Fuck it. Who cares? Dorchester became a part of Boston. And there's people that live their entire lives, die here in Dorchester. And still put on their fucking resume, I don't live in Boston, I live in Dorchester.
Yeah. Well, we all know the most famous resident, Dorchester Donnie.
Woo! You know the bar I frequent, Brandon Wahlberg, is the bartender?
Not even a little surprising.
It's not. I've seen him, and I was like, holy shit, it's fucking Brandon Wahlberg. The Wahlbergs came all the way back to us. Hopefully there's no Vietnamese woman nearby.
Oh boy. So you released this book. What has been like the biggest find you've had from releasing? I'm assuming this is your first. That's what it sounded like when talking to Ed, correct?
It's very much my first. I wish I had at least two more rounds of editing for that one. But hey, you work with what you have, you know?
Mm-hmm. What was the... I guess what kind of hardship did you come up against when you were making it? Like, what is the worst part of writing a book do you find?
Finding, because I'm technically writing a book right now, so I can tell you, it's when you have the idea, when you know how to execute it, and you know you want to execute it, but you aren't executing it the very second you have. The problem with me personally is if I don't have that spark, like if I don't get like, oh, I need to write that fucking down right now, I end up lingering. And I just think, oh, I could do this. I could do that. I could do this. I could do that. It's kind of like when the painter says that they're never finished with a painting. It's hard to find the strength to move on from something you don't think is strong enough.
Mm-hmm.
And then the perfectionist comes out because perfect is the enemy of good.
As a musician, I understand that very well.
As a musician, I also understand that very well. But I'm a black male musician.
I can't tell you how many times the tracks just sat there like, maybe it's ready. I don't know. Maybe I could do something else. And it'll sit there on the computer for years and nobody hears it other than me.
Funny enough, that's exactly where my mind was at when I started making music. Because I've seen so many of my friends who are rappers, even metalheads, who also make metal, just sit on music. And I'm like, dude, this is brilliant. Release it. And he's like, oh, I got to do this. I got to do that. That I decided I loved Anal Cunt growing up. Anal Cunt went to my high school. Seth Putnam, he went to my high school.
That's actually pretty interesting.
As did Louis C.K. and Joey from Friends. I realized I want to make music, but I don't really give a shit if the quality is perfect. And I just started busting my ass making tracks with my guitarist. I remember the first night we made music. I think we were high on shrooms or fucking something. And I was like, hey, you got your guitar, right? He was like, yeah. And I can scream, right? And he was like, yeah. And he had three strings on his broken guitar. We recorded our first black metal demo that night. And this is the power of the internet. I hit up my friend, Hell on Earth 3. I would tell you to interview him, but because he's a badass, but he doesn't speak English. We write text in English, though, and he's from Argentina. And he made a sick, badass black metal logo for me. He said, Tepesh. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yep, it's time. And I just released track after track. Now, the quality of those tracks, up to your heart. But raw black metal, for those that don't know, is raw.
Yeah.
And it's so it can so it's fucking it's kind of beautiful that I was trained with Boston City Singers. Mm-hmm. And I went to a black church. So that means I was singing at my ass off for most of my young child life. And I shook Mitt Romney's hand from my singing. I shook Mitt Romney's hand when I was a kid. I actually told him this face to face. I was like, wait a minute, you're not black. And then he laughed. And I shook his hand because I was like, I thought he was Deval Patrick.
I'm going to be honest, I have no idea who Deval Patrick is. But anyone fucking with him is... That's fun to me.
You're the governor.
Okay. So I guess what kind of tools did you utilize to put this out? Like who did you do it through Amazon like everybody else?
Yep.
Do you go through somebody else or?
So the tools I used to build the Gangster Plant, and it's kind of humble and it's humbling, was my cell phone, Google Doc, and then eventually my laptops. But, you know, when I started working at More Than Words, I was able to buy laptop after laptop. And eventually I settled with this beautiful gaming PC, gaming laptop, which I did most of my last writing on. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of grit, and I started with pen and paper, but really, pen and paper is just not the way when you're writing in 2020 or even 2018. Mm-hmm. Google Docs is such a powerful tool because you can share it with literally anyone mm-hmm. who has an email. And I think that as soon as people realize you can be a decentralized fucking writer, you don't have to be sitting in a fucking typewriter every day. You can be writing. I wrote almost half of my novel, my first novel, and it shows because of the lack of editing in some places on my phone.
Yeah. I mean, I can respect that. Like, definitely my last EP I wrote in one of those like little MIDI programming apps on my cell phone. Like everything started there. Eventually I moved it, you know, to the computer and put some nicer soft synths over top of everything. But it all started just in, you know, just a little cell phone app. And, you know, honestly, I felt it's probably one of the stronger piece of music I'd released until that point. It's interesting what you can do.
A little inside secret from Gas Station Pocket Knife to you. I think that every song that we've written for Gas Station Pocket Knife, Tepesh, well, my own individual stuff, I've worked with other producers and artists, so there's a lot more polish, but almost everything for Gas Station Pocket Knife has been recorded, at least at first, on a cell phone.
Yeah. I wish they had better condenser microphones on cell phone.
Yep.
Because I always hated you have to like put it in the room next to it just so it wouldn't overblast the microphone on the phone.
But BandLab, that's been the lifesaver. BandLab's basically Google Docs, but for music.
Interesting. I don't know that I've ever heard of that one. I'll have to look it up.
A lot of young rappers shown it to me, and I use it for not rap, so it's like,
okay.
It's kind of the go-to, I think. It's free software.
Okay. Yeah, I was actually really interested in your question number three. In particular, you were talking about violence.
Oh, God.
And violence is such a big question in media, you know, how does it affect people?
If you ask the guy that made Avatar, who's a cuck, James Cameron, he would tell you that violence bad, even though he made shit ton of money off of putting up really shitty CGI violence. Well, really good CGI violence, I guess. Whatever.
It depends which is the movies you want to reference. Well, as I've said earlier in my podcast, Road to Hell, film reviews, you look into his background and his wife's or his ex-wife's background and all the government contracts and
wink wink.
Yeah, you can take those movies for what they might be.
But on the subject of violence, I think as someone that like loves recreational violence and someone who is not a stoop. I think I'm a big thinker. I like to think about things. I spend a lot of time actually thinking about what the fuck am I looking at? Why am I looking at it? Mm-hmm. And as a human being on this earth, and I had this thought when I was watching a dinosaur documentary, I think it was Big Al something or whatever. And I was just thinking about what a fucking Allosaurus, like think about the state of the planet back in dinosaur times. Not much has changed. Nothing has changed, really. The point of life is to live as long and happy and successfully as possible, if anything else, mm-hmm. if nothing else. And violence, at least justifiable violence, is always trying to get something. There's the reason for it. Mm-hmm. And violence doesn't just happen for no reason. There's always predetermining factors that, oh, this is going to happen because this. You punch me in the nose, I'm going to punch you back. Simple as. Mm-hmm. As a kid, I used to rail against the baby shows. And why? I think about myself now, I'm like, why did I hate them? Because they purposely avoided the topic of what to do when you see conflict or what is conflict. And without conflict, there's no, it's like Hegelian dialectics or whatever. It's like without conflict, you don't know anything about a thing. Mm-hmm. You can know a history about something, but as far as you know, the histories lie until you push comes to shove. Mm-hmm. And when I was a kid, I remember I got jumped by both Boston. So I also got jumped last year, but I won that time. But as a kid, I got jumped at my 17th birthday. But when I was 17, leaving the gym, and from there, a bunch of other bad shit happened in my life. But I think back to, damn, I love martial arts. I love XYZ, but I wasn't prepared for an asshole to try and to steal from me after I was nice to him. And without that knowledge that people can be cruel, without the ability to be cruel back, it's kind of like what Jordan Peterson says, you're not strong if you avoid violence out of fear of your own damage. You're strong when you avoid violence out of knowledge of you being able to create more violence. Mm-hmm. And I think the part of art of your job as an entertainer should be to shed light on the dark spaces and the crevices of the human mind for those that aren't there yet.
Interesting. And obviously, you know, as you mentioned earlier, you feel as though this is something that's definitely not happening in media today. Like,
It's an abortion. It's an abortion. Like, you look at the new Powerpuff Girls, for example. That's probably an older example. It's probably, yeah. But besides all the weird pedo shit and all that other crap, the problem with that show was it wasn't about good triumphing over evil. It wasn't about these superheroes that you as a kid can look up to and be like, damn, that bitch kicked that guy's ass. No, it became, what's it called? A slice of life anime.
Yeah. Well, but and I think a lot of that seems to come from the modern writers don't really believe in good versus evil. You know, the minor attracted people is, you know, the term they give for pedophiles.
They don't believe in good versus evil, and the problem is they think that, but they still believe strong should devour the weak because they think that their values make them strong on its own. Mm-hmm. So someone with the wrong values is just weak or uninformed. That's just a sickening mindset to ingrain, especially into children, that, mm-hmm. oh, that pedophile, he's not a bad guy. Just stick around. You might change. That's like BPD logic. Like, mm-hmm. oh, yeah, this fucking 25-year-old, he may be an asshole, but when I'm 18, he's going to change his ways. Like, what the fuck?
Well, messaging is definitely something. I'm a parent, and
respect. I'm not.
I have a mixed race kid, and messaging has always been incredibly important to me because, especially the messaging towards young Black people, has always upset me. It's
terrifying.
To me, it's a matter of like you're doing nothing but trying to hold these people back, and I sure as hell don't want that for my kid. Like,
yeah.
Like I will make sure that my daughter is aware of the struggles that she might encounter in life, but I'm certainly not going to tell her she's incapable of anything because even if it was true, it wouldn't do her any good.
Do you know the wrestler Cody Rhodes?
I know by name. I have,
well,
in fairness, I haven't been a big wrestling fan since about the NWO days.
That's fine. He's the son of Dusty Rhodes.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
So Cody Rhodes has a black wife, and he made a speech back in a few years ago. It's a beautiful promo, as they say, but it was, to me, it was a speech. It was like the most beautiful speech I haven't heard a president make in fucking years. I wish fucking Cody Rhodes should write for Biden at the very least or something. Like, Cody said something that really stuck out to me. He was like, I'm raising a, because his wife is black, he's raising a beautiful black and white child who's going to learn to be a proud American and proud black woman and proud white woman. Mm-hmm. And people cringe when they hear proud white in the sense. And I know why.
Yeah.
Like but I feel like it's the wrong attitude to have. I grew up surrounded by, because I grew up in both Dorchester, but I was bused to school in a white suburb, or Jewish suburb. It was a, in Newton. And I was bused to school. So I would go to school, see all this money, see all these houses, see all these people, and be surrounded on a bus with other black faces that I had no real connection to. I wasn't friends with these other black faces on the bus, really, until I was more popular and more accepted, but whatever. But I was surrounded by people who were either desperately clinging on to what they think makes them real or themselves or black, or some people, you know, they abandoned that and they were like, go full, not incel, because that wasn't really a thing growing in my teenagehood, thank God. But like I remember Elliot Roger happened when I was in like junior or senior year, and we were just like, whoa, weird guy, we didn't know incel culture or nothing. Yeah. And then I got out of high school, and then I'm listening to Negative XP every other day, but whatever. And I think, damn, we need to really readjust what it means to be a person in this country. Mm-hmm. Not just what it means to be a black person or a white person. We just need to readjust what we think of as personhood. Because I've seen footage. I've seen the side effects of what goes on, what happens to a person when they don't have a strong sense of identity. Mm-hmm. And their identity is built on malicious actions or groupthink. Mm-hmm. And groupthink, it's not always poison. Like, humans are social creatures, but it can lead to some dark paths, you know?
Yeah. I guess wrapping up the podcast, I'm curious, where do we send people to buy your book, learn more about you, and whatever facet you want to, be that music or whatever?
So my Instagrams, I have three, are my safest bet, because it's the... What's that old meme? It's Facebook is where you go, where
old people go.
Old people go. Twitter is the where everyone pretends, where famous people pretend to be retarded, and Instagram is where poor people pretend to be rich. So or famous, I guess. So I have Instagram, which is the TheEman216. And from there, I have both my other Instagrams for both Gas Station Pocket Knife, my band, and my my main Die Young Entertainment, which is the brand that I associate everything I do under, is Instagram. And then I have a YouTube channel, which is DYE, Die Young Entertainment. It's DYE, the letters, and then the words Die Young Entertainment. I just released a new YouTube video. It's I'll send it to you because you probably find it cool. It's a death match: Samoa Joe versus Necro Butcher with Old Fortune, old Funeral, one of Varg from Burzum's first bands.
Okay,
music, a whole EP set to it, and it's really I say it's well done.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, I try to have as much fun as a creative can. From there you can know all about me. I have an Insta bio link, and you can click that. It'll see all of my shit and some of my friends' shit there too.
Well, thanks so much for coming on today, boss. I definitely think we're gonna have some interesting commentary on this particular episode. So,
oh yeah,
looking forward to that.
And thanks for supporting Black creators. It's not even February.
Technically, this might actually come out in February, but that was unplanned. Let's put it that way.
Hey, it's your second Black creator of the day. You got Edward Black and a black guy.
Do you fancy yourself the next Tolkien, Lewis, or Barker? Maybe you just have something subversive to say. Hopefully this podcast is helping you. But maybe your ambitions are just a little bigger than you can handle on your own. Head over to ironagemarketing.com and let Nikki P. help ensure your book doesn't release to nobody.